Chapter 8, verse 1 and 2 of the Bhagavad Gita.
So the first chapter, the 8th chapter, the first verse. Arjuna uvaja. Kim tat brahm kim adhyatyatmam. Kim adhyatmam. Kim karma purushottama. Adhibhutam chitcha kim proktam. Adhidaivam kim ujjate. We'll do the second one also, because that is also part of his question. Adhiyajna katham kotra. Dehesmin madhusudana. Prayana kale chakatham. Yeyosi niyatatma bihi. So Arjuna uvacha. Arjuna asked. What did he ask? The student has full freedom to question the teacher, and many times Arjuna even challenges the teacher. In the 6th chapter, he says, whatever you have taught me, I don't think it is useful. I think it is not helpful at all. So, he has the freedom to challenge the teacher. It's not like, I have spoken and so you have to listen and obey implicitly, otherwise you will suffer forever. No, there is nowhere in the Gita any kind of instruction. The teacher is giving advice and then telling the student, if you wish to follow, you may. If you follow, these are the benefits. If you don't follow, these are the harmful things will happen, but the choice is yours. So it is a very wonderful text because the teacher is giving full opportunity to the student to question, to doubt, to challenge, and then whether to decide whether he wants to follow or not. And at the end of the 18th chapter, after 700 verses, the teacher, even at that time, nowhere he says that you have to follow. He says, I have given you this truth. Whatever you have heard, ichchasi, whatever you desire, you do. I am not forcing you. I am not saying that just because I am the Lord, you have to follow. No, the freedom is yours. So here, Arjuna is questioning. So he says, who is that Brahma, the Lord? What is that, his nature? And who is Adhyatma? Who is that that you have mentioned? What is karma? What is the action that you have talked about? Purushottama, he calls him the highest among beings because he recognized that he is dealing with the Lord himself. He believed that Krishna is the Lord who came on earth and walked like a human being to give us the right message. So he calls him the Purushottama, the highest among all the beings. Who is that Adhibhuta that you have talked about and that is talked about in the scriptures? Cha means and, kim Adhibhutam proktam is spoken about. Proktam is the passive voice. So who is that Adhibhutam that has been spoken about by you and has been spoken about in the scriptures? I have vaguely heard that, but I don't know what it means. And Adhidaivam kim uchyate? Adhidaivam, who is the Adhidaivam kim uchyate? Who is called? Again the passive tense. Who is called as Adhidaivam in this universe? What is that Adhidaivam? I have no idea. Then in the second verse he says, Adhiyajna katham ko atra? Adhiyajna, who is katham? Who is this Adhiyajna atra? Atra, here, atra dehe, in this body. They say Adhiyajna is the Lord of the sacrifices. So where is that Adhiyajna in this body? Who is he? What is his nature? Dehe, asmin dehe, in this body, in my body, where is this Adhiyajna? Where is this Lord? Who is he? What does he do? He wants to know all that. Asmin Madhusudana. Madhusudana was one of Krishna's names. Krishna has many names, but one of them is Madhusudana. Madhu was a terrible demon, and it is said that Krishna killed that terrible demon. Part of Krishna's incarnation was to remove evil. So this evil demon was killed by him. So That's how he gave the name Madhusudana, the one who killed Madhu. And then the last one, which is a very important question for us, because when we live in this world, he says, Prayana Kale Cha Katham. Prayana Kale. Prayana Kale means, Kale means time, Prayan means at the time of departure. So, at the time of death, Katham Cha Katham, Katham how? Neyosi, Neya Asi. How are you to be known? How am I to know you at the time of death? Niyat Atma Bhihi. Niyat means controlled. Atma means self. So those of us who are self-controlled human beings, how are we to know you? Because it is well said in the scriptures, all the scriptures say that to progress in spirituality, you have to have some degree of self-control. You know, a person just lives the life whatever he wants and does whatever he wants, and just sleeps whenever he wants, eats whenever he wants, drinks whatever, you know, and just, I mean, just wasting his life, cannot progress. Not only in the spiritual field, even if he wants to be successful in business, or he wants to be a successful doctor or an engineer or a teacher or even a housewife or a mother, you have to have some discipline in your life. You know, if you live an undisciplined life and just do anything and everything at any time and every time, you will never be successful. An Olympic athlete, he cannot live a life of indiscipline. Morning to evening, his day is structured. What am I going to eat? How much am I going to exercise? What are the entertainments I'm going to have? You know, he cannot go out late at night partying if he has a race next morning. So he says that for a person who is self-controlled and wanting to progress on the spiritual path, how can that person know you? And at the time of death, because our scriptures say that whatever your thought is at the time of death, that is going to be your ultimate goal. It is said very clearly. This reminds me of a story. There was this very rich businessman, Sekhji. You know, he was a multi-millionaire, very rich. And he had this huge department store in downtown, you know, like Macy's or one of these big ones, and had everything, you know, that could be bought. And he was the richest businessman. The store was very successful and he was so rich, you know. But anyway, he got old and he was on his deathbed. And he was so sick that the doctor said, you know, it's just about time for him to leave. And he didn't want to go to the hospital. All the medicines had been done and everything. He said, I want to die peacefully in my house. So he was in his house. He was dying. And as it is the tradition in India, when somebody's dying, they put on some spiritual music, or they put verses from the Bhagavad Gita, or some chanting of the name of the Lord, so that hopefully at the time of death, he will remember the Lord, and then at least he will reach. So this rich businessman is lying half dead, almost barely can breathe, and the beautiful music is playing. And then he says, you know, is Ramesh here? You know, he had three sons. So he says, is Ramesh here? Of course, the children and the wife and all the whole family, everybody was there. So Ramesh says, yes, father, I'm here. So he says, is Suresh here? So he thinks. So he says, yes, father, I'm here, Suresh. Is little Pappu here? The little son, they used to call him Pappu. Is little Pappu here? He said, father, I am here too. So suddenly he looked up. He says, you idiots, if all three of you are here, who is at the store? And he said that and he died. He got so angry. So the point is that despite all the music playing, his own thought was only of the store. He was thinking of money, that who is making money at the store? Who is watching this? At the last moment, he should be thinking about the Lord or chanting his name. So the point of the matter is that whatever you think throughout your life is going to be your thought at the time of death. Whatever you think throughout your life is going to be your thought at the time of death. If you think that all my life I'm going to be a horrible being and, you know, treat people badly, and then suddenly at the time of death, you know, I'll read the Bhagavad Gita and get liberated. It is not going to happen. Or even in the other Christian faith also, they chant the verses from the Bible and all, you know, when a person is dying. So the idea is that the person should have spiritual thoughts you know, even in the Islam faith, you know, they chant verses from the Quran. I was reading that recently. And so the idea is that the person at the time of death should be thinking about the Lord. So if I want to think about him at the time of death, I have to start thinking about him from today. I cannot expect that suddenly at the time of death, I will suddenly become a wise or enlightened person. Whatever I have been thinking of, so they say, start thinking about him from today onwards. From in all your activities when you do, when you wake up in the morning, the first thing, as soon as you wake up, you should try just to close your eyes and then just take a few deep breaths and then chant your mantra. Just chant the name of the Lord. Just remember him as much as possible. As soon as you wake up, before you get out of bed, chant the name of the Lord and just remember him. And then, of course, throughout the day, as much as possible, when you're doing something good or something happens, especially when somebody praises you, immediately try to do that Krishna Arpanamastu. It is dedicated to the Lord. The Lord is the one who is working through me. If you have cooked some beautiful dish and somebody praises, Lord, thank you very much. Or if I am a doctor and I have some patient gets well and praises me, you should thank the Lord. Whatever job I am doing, anything, the fact that I am moving my hand is because of the Lord. What abilities do I have? The life in me is given by him. So constantly remembering him in all your activities, when you see the beautiful moon in the sky rising, or you see the sunrise or the sunset, or the birds chirping, or the flowers blooming, or a little child smiling, try to remember who gave this beauty to this child, who gave this fragrance to this flower, who gave the power to the moon to rise and, you know, and to just light up the whole universe. So try as much as possible to remember him. And when you do that, then your mind becomes filled with God's presence. And that's what these saints did. You look at Mirabai's life. She was a woman who, her whole life, she said, I'm married to Krishna, the Lord. I do not want anybody else. She didn't want her husband. She didn't want to have anything to do with her father-in-law. She was a queen. She didn't want anything to do with her kingdom. And her whole life was devoted to trying to reach God and trying to know him. Maybe we cannot reach that level of Mirabai or, you know, Jesus or Buddha, but at least in our own way, we can try by constantly remembering him. And then before you go to bed at night, it is extremely important, you know, not to, I recommend people do not watch that 11 o'clock news, because that is full of violence and, you know, horrible rapes and murders and Iraq. And why do you want to know all that? You know, especially the last thing at night, you watch that 11 o'clock news, that is the most horrible thing, or the 10 o'clock news or whatever. So do not watch the news at night, but read some good books. Read the, you know, some spiritual books, maybe, you know, the Bible, the Gita, whatever is you some good philosophy, some good thoughts by good authors and by good philosophers and professors and all, so that you may sleep with good thoughts. Because they say whatever the last thought in your mind plays like a tape recorder in your mind throughout the night. And then when you lie down and put off the lights, then consciously just relax your body from head to toe. Start watching your breath. And as you watch your breath, just again start chanting the mantra. Chant the name of the Lord. Whatever the mantra it is, it doesn't matter. It can be Om, Om Namah Shivaya, the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Ghost, Allahu Akbar. It doesn't matter. But whatever your mantra is, whatever the name of the Lord, chant that before you go to bed. That is very, very important. Relax your body, watch your breath and chant, and you will find that your sleep will be a lot more peaceful. Because the last thought, hopefully, that has been there in your mind is the name of the Lord. So that is what he says, that answer these questions. And Swami Chinmayananda in his tape, he says, when we go for an exam, as in nowadays, of course, they give multiple choice. You know, they give you 100 and you have to check off yes and no, you know, or they give you multiple choice and you A, B, C, D, E. But in the olden days when we studied, that's a long time back, they used to give us essay type questions. You know, so they would give you like 8 questions in the question paper, you know, and each one had to do with a different part of your exam. Suppose I was doing anatomy or physiology or biochemistry, they would give me 8 questions. say in biochemistry, what is the nature of, you know, CO2 or H2O or something like that. But you had to answer in an essay form. You did not just say in one line, but you had to write a whole paragraph about whatever that subject is. And so sometimes they would give you 8 and they would say, choose 5 out of 8. You can answer any 5. And so you pick out of 8, you pick the 5. But here the student is not giving Krishna a choice. You know, that I have asked you 6 things. You can, and the 7th one is, how can I reach you? So he doesn't say answer any 4 out of 7. He wants all 7. He says answer everyone. I want to know everyone. All of them I wish to know. And the 7th one, which I have not written here, is how can I reach you at the time of death? So these 7 questions the student is asking the teacher, but not giving the teacher any choice. You have to answer all of them and you have to answer till I'm satisfied. So the teacher now has a big task ahead of him, that how am I to satisfy the student's curiosity, his desire to know, and he sees that the student is genuine, has a genuine doubt, and wants to evolve spiritually. See, that is the very important hallmark of when you approach a teacher, you know, when you're studying spirituality. That's why we always say it is very important to have a guru, a teacher, because when you approach the teacher with humility, your doubts can be answered. If the teacher knows, if the teacher is right, or if the teacher has learned, then if you approach the teacher with the right attitude, with the desire to know, not just to test the teacher. You know, some people ask questions, they already know the answer, but they say, let me see if this guy knows them. Not with that attitude, but with the attitude that I want to learn. So that is the essence of Arjuna's question, that who are all of these 6, and the last one is, how can I reach you at the time of death? So that is the question. We'll take a pause if anybody has any comments, anything they want to add on it. Yes.
Okay, I've been reading this like at home too, and it's really, yes, cool. But my big question is, all the unfinished karma, let's say that you have a year before you die, or a day, or whatever it is, where you realize you really screwed up and you want to reach, but you've got all of this karma, mm-hmm, and but it says then you'll reach him. Does that mean that you'd never have to come back again? And what about all that unfinished karma?
Well, actually, first of all, the karma doesn't end. That is for sure. Every karma has to be
exhausted,
except if you realize. If you have realized the truth while alive, like a realized master, somebody like Jesus or Buddha or Swami Chinmayananda or Shankaracharya, when they realize the truth and their ego has ended, then those karmas get burnt. They merge with the infinite karma. But for you and me, people like us, we have to go through our karmas. The only karmas that a realized master has to go through, actually there are 3 types of karmas. One is called Sanchit. That means what I have accumulated in the past. Like you said, I've done 1,000 bad deeds. Now, out of those 1,000 bad deeds, 10 or 20 or 100 I suffered in this birth. But there were 900 left still to suffer, for example. Now, those 900 plus any good or bad deeds I did in my life get put in a bank and collected for my next life. Right?
So you'd still have to come back even...
Yes.
Even if it said you reached.
Right, but if you reach God, like a Jesus or a Buddha, he still has to, whatever the karmas of this lifetime that were destined for him or her, he has to undergo. That's why Jesus suffered on the cross. That's why Buddha, that's why a lot of these saints get cancer at the time of death. You know, we have example of Raman Maharishi and Ramakrishna Paramahansa. Some of these saints had cancer at the time of death. You say, well, he's a realized master. Why did he get cancer? Because those were the karmas of this particular birth that he or she had to undergo. And after that, then that person is not born again. A person who is a realized master is not born again because that individuality, that ego has ended. The person is no longer alive. The person is gone. He has merged with God. So that person's karmas merged with the infinite karmas, and his future karmas also get burned. So, but that is only for very few, you know, realized masters, maybe 1 or 2 in the universe, or 3 at this moment on the earth. But yeah, they do not have to come back again. They do not have to take birth. But for us, we have to. So the message that we take from it is that whatever past karmas I have done, I have no control over, right? All I have control over is the present. So rather than worrying about what happened in the past or what is going to happen in the future, let me take care of my present. Let me do good karmas. Let me serve the world. Let me help others. Let me love God. Let me pray. Let me read the right books. Let me, you know. So when I am doing good deeds and serving and helping, it is exhausting my some of my bad karmas, and it is creating good karmas for my future. So that is the essence that we should take. And instead of worrying about, you know, what karmas I have done in previous life or 10 life, don't worry about it. All you have is the present. So do the best you can. Try to make at least this world a better place. You know, maybe you cannot be a Buddha or a Jesus or a Shankaracharya or Chinmayananda. You cannot change the whole world. But maybe I can make some change in the city of Bakersfield. Maybe I can help a few people to get better. Maybe I can go to the nursing home and serve some, you know, elderly people. Or maybe I can educate some children or help somewhere, you know, in the poverty places where they need help. So the idea is that I should do whatever good I can. While I am serving, I should also try to know who is God, who is, what is his nature. And that comes from reading good books, meeting with saints and listening to, you know, and, you know, associating with people and listening to good things. So then what happens is that as you spend more and more time thinking about him, your mind gets more and more tuned with the Lord. And then such people slowly purify their thoughts, purify their mind, their actions become purer, till finally they either they may reach sainthood in this lifetime, or if they have done a lot of good deeds, then that lifetime, in the next life, they will continue the journey.
I've been struggling with the role that Hatha Yoga plays in all this. And from something you said this morning about the first maybe five chapters or the first six chapters, it talks about, you know, how to work in the world and how we are in the world. And so what I think, pieces seems to have come together in the puzzle, that it seems as though the Hatha Yoga, it helps to purify the body and the subtle body so that and remove some restrictions and blockages so that the knowledge that you learn about in the next six chapters of the Bhagavad Gita, that makes it easier to understand.
Yes. No, you're absolutely right. And also, I think Hatha Yoga also teaches you discipline, self-control. So all those things teaches you discipline, self-control. And if it is done with the right attitude, and again, that Hatha Yoga should not be done just for physical benefit, but for the spiritual benefit, that it is, I'm purifying my mind. When I'm, even when we are doing yoga on Tuesday evening, some people come, it should be done with the idea that this body is a temple. Because the Lord resides. See, wherever the Lord resides is a temple, right? If it is, when you go to church, when they have Jesus there, you say this is a temple. Why? Because Jesus lives here. We have a temple where Krishna lives. So this body is a temple too, because God lives here, right? So I take care of this body as a temple of God. So I keep this body clean, I nourish it, but not with the idea that I should, you know, spend my whole time in nourishing and taking care of this body, but I should take care of this body so I may serve the world. It is a, there is a very beautiful line in the Upanishads where it says, Sthirai rangai stushtu vagam sastanu bihi vyashema deva hitam yadayu. So these students are praying, oh Lord, may we have a healthy body and healthy limbs. Why? So that whatever deva, whatever yadayu, whatever life I have been given, vyashema deva hitam, may I serve the Lord. So this body is an instrument that has been given to me to serve. It is not a given, a body is not an instrument just given so I may enjoy and life and live happy. You know, people say, who knows about next life? You know, khao piyo maja karo, enjoy your life. You know, why you want to worry about the past life and future life? You have this life, enjoy it, eat, drink, be merry, and then, you know, what, who knows whether there is heaven or hell. This is all just, you know, these Bible and Quran and Gita and all are just written by these, you know, people 2,000, 5,000 years ago, they didn't know. They didn't have all these pleasures and fun and all. They didn't have internet and all this beautiful pleasures we have. Enjoy life, you know, why waste your time? No, this, the truth is there, and so this body is given to me to serve. Deva hitam yatayo, whatever life I have been given, O Lord, make me healthy so that I may serve you. And Hatha Yoga is a very beautiful way to purify the body, make it healthy. And if it's done with the right attitude, while you're doing it, you're thinking about the Lord, then that becomes a meditative exercise. And then that Hatha Yoga can lead to meditation, because your mind is so peaceful that it can, then you can go into meditation.
This concludes the discussion of the Bhagavad Gita with Dr. Anil Mehta.